Lears, a true oppressor who routinely ripped Celine's work to shreds before her eyes if a single stitch was out of place. And this tyrannical nun with chapped hands thought she merited fear? As Pippa would say, not bloody likely. A snicker escaped Celine's mouth. Pippa towed her chair in response. What could have caused the Mother Superior's hands to become so worn? Perhaps she labored on some clandestine craft deep in the hollows of her cell. A painter, perhaps. Or a sculptor. What if she was secretly a wordsmith by night? Even better if she wrote entirely in asides or things laced with double meaning, like Malvolio in Twelfth Night. Be by my life, this is my lady's hand. These be her very C's, her U's, and her T's, and thus she makes her great P's. Celine coughed. Creases of irritation formed across the Mother Superior's forehead. The idea that this nun in a starched habit would say anything untoward caused Celine to lock eyes on the polished stone floor to keep from laughing. Pippa nudged her again, this time more forcefully. Though her friend said nothing, Celine could tell Pippa was not the least bit amused by their situation. Rightly so. Nothing about angering the convent's matron should be funny. This woman had given them a place to live and work, a means by which to find their way in the new world. Only an ungrateful, troublesome girl would see otherwise. A girl precisely like Celine. Sobered by these thoughts, Celine chewed the inside of her cheek, the room growing warmer, her stays pulling tighter.
I expect you to explain yourself, Mademoiselle Rousseau,
the Mother Superior began, in a voice that was tinny and gravelly all at once. Celine kept silent, her eyes cast downward. She knew better than to begin by offering a defense. The Mother Superior had not called them here with a mind to listen. She had called them here with a mind to teach. It was a lesson Celine understood well. She'd been raised on it.
This young woman you met in the square. Why does she not come to the convent in daylight or consult a local dressmaker?
The Mother Superior asked.
If she wishes to hire you to design garments for her, it seems fitting for her to come here, n'est-ce pas?
When Celine still did not respond, the Mother Superior grunted, leaned closer.
Répondez-moi, Mademoiselle Rousseau. Immédiatement,
she whispered, her tone laced with warning.
Or you and Mademoiselle Montrose will regret it.
At the threat, Celine raised her head to meet the Mother Superior's gaze. She licked her lips to bide time as she chose her next words.
Je suis désolée, Mère Supérieure, Celine apologized.
She glanced to her right, trying to decide whether or not to involve Pippa in this falsehood.
But, alas, her modiste is unfamiliar with the Baroque style of dress.
She expressed urgency in needing the garments, and a schedule that did not appear to be flexible during the day.
You see, she volunteers each afternoon with a ladies' organization that knits socks for children.
Even in profile, Celine saw Pippa's eyes widen with dismay. It was an abhorrent lie, to be sure. Fashioning Odette as an angel with a soft spot for barefooted souls was among the more colorful stories Celine had told in her lifetime. But this entire situation was ridiculous. And Celine enjoyed prevailing over tyrants, even by the barest of measures. Especially ones who threatened her friends. The Mother Superior's frown softened, though the rest of her expression remained doubtful. She linked her hands behind her back and began pacing.
Be that as it may, I do not feel it is appropriate for you to travel through the city unescorted past sundown. a young woman, not much older than you, perished along the docks only yesterday.
In Celine's opinion, perished was a rather subdued word for being ripped to pieces beneath a starlit sky. The Mother Superior paused in silent prayer before resuming her lecture.
During carnival season, there are many revelers in the streets. Sin runs rampant, and I do not wish for a mind as weak and susceptible as yours to be lured by danger.
Though Celine bristled at the slight, she nodded in agreement. I too do not wish to be tempted by anything untoward. She pressed a hand over her heart. But I believe this young woman to be good and God-fearing, Mère Superior. And the money she will give the convent for my work would undoubtedly be of great benefit to us all. She made it clear several times that cost was not an object.
I see.
The Mother Superior turned toward Pippa without warning.
Mademoiselle Montrose, she said, it appears you have little to offer on the matter. What have you to say about this situation?
Celine closed her eyes, bracing herself for what was to come. She wouldn't blame Pippa for telling the truth. It was simply in her nature to do so. And who could blame Pippa for following her natural inclination? Pippa cleared her throat, her small hands tightening into fists.
I found the young lady quite trustworthy and virtuous as well, Mother Superior, she said slowly. Of course, your concerns are not without merit, especially given what happened along the docks. Would it make a difference if I offered to accompany her? We could take the lady's measurements together and then be on our way. I don't believe we would be gone from the convent for long. In fact, I see no reason why we would have to miss evening prayer.
Time ground to a halt. It was Celine's turn to have her eyes widened with dismay. Pippa Montrose had offered to help, had lied for Celine to a nun.
I have many misgivings, Mademoiselle Montrose, the Mother Superior said after a breath. But perhaps if you are willing to provide escort...
I am willing to take full responsibility. Pippa grasped the tiny gold crucifix nestled at the hollow of her throat.
She let her voice drop, let it fill with reverence.
And I trust God will go with us tonight.
The Mother Superior frowned again, her lips unspooling slowly. Her attention shifted from Pippa towards Celine and back again. She stood straight and made a decision.
Very well, she said.
A flare of surprise shot through Celine. The Mother Superior had shifted tack too quickly, too easily. Suspicion gnawed at Celine's stomach. She eyed Pippa sidelong, but her friend did not glance her way.
Thank you, Mother Superior, Pippa murmured. I promise all will go as planned.
Of course. As long as you understand, I've put my full trust in you, Mademoiselle Montrose. Do not disappoint me.
The nun's smile was disturbingly beatific.
May his light shine upon you both, my children.
Ivea, 1872. Avenue d'Ursuline, New Orleans, Louisiana. I first glimpse my next victim as she passes beneath the flame of a gas lamp. Her eyes flash in a most curious way, as though she is on edge or held in suspense, perhaps in the midst of doing something illicit. The sight catches my attention, even through the horde of bustling bodies. A handful of them brimming with otherworldly energy. Her unease looks strangely beguiling, for it is the opposite of performative. She is heedless of everything around her, save the task at hand. It is a difficult undertaking for a hapless mortal to move about a crowd so blissfully unaware, so enviably unaffected. Crowds fascinate me. They provide demons such as myself with unique opportunities. Occasions to be seen and unseen in the same breath. For all we not always, human and creature alike, performing to some degree. I digress. The moment I enjoy most is when I first begin scanning the masses. When I first lay eyes on my target and they know not that they are being watched, they act without thought, smile without agenda, laugh as though not a soul is listening. I know what this must sound like. It sounds disconcerting. I am aware. But I am by nature disconcerting. There are moments in which I can be delightful too. I speak many languages. I have traveled the world twice over. I can sing the entirety of Verdi's Aida without the need of sheet music. Do I not deserve a modicum of consideration for this and many other achievements? I would like to think so, though I know it to be impossible. Demons should not be granted the indulgence of men. So saith man, at least. But I'll share a secret. In my years, I have discovered it is possible to be both disconcerting and delightful all at once. Wine can be delicious though it muddles the mind. A mother may love and hate her children in the span of the same afternoon, and the predator could abhor itself even as it relishes its evening meal. I understand my behavior might be construed as odd, unseemly, but I am a thing of oddity, a creature born apart from this world. Don't fret on my account. I have never been one of those immortals who enjoy toying with their food, nor do I particularly like stalking my prey. I am not looking for their weaknesses. Rather, I am understanding their humanity. There is something wrong with treating a living being as though it exists purely for my own sport. Every action I undertake has a purpose. It is the characteristic that distinguishes me from many beings of the other world. My convictions. I feel keenly the loss of any life taken. The kill last week along the pier did not thrill me in any way. It was necessarily gruesome, in a manner I typically eschew, especially for such an indiscriminate death. I brought about the girl's end simply to see what was possible, to see what kind of attention it would draw. Alas, it did not have the effect I hoped, for my enemy remains above the authorities' notice. It appears a more lasting impression must be left with my next victim, a more direct assault upon my enemy's doorstep. Each death to come will be felt all the more keenly. That is of primary importance. For though I may disdain wanton bloodshed, I am not impervious to the draw of the hunt. A friend from childhood used to say she knew when an animal had perished in agony. She could taste it, and it ruined the meal for her. I find I am inclined to agree. There is also a certain lure to knowing what will happen next, before anyone else does. Perhaps it is a result of my unconventional upbringing, or maybe it is simply human nature. And I was human once. A part of me still longs to be. Maybe that is what draws me to the liveliness of the French Quarter. I avoided hunting in it for many years, because its corners contained memories not soon forgotten. Images of pain and loss and heartbreak. But I have returned to my old haunt after too long a time, for I have an ancient score to settle. A final performance to give. Sacro fremito di gloria, tutta l'anima mi investe. A sacred thrill of glory runs through my heart. Perhaps I am still human after all.
A touch of violence.
Celine!
Pippa called out, as Celine whirled into the crowd, her steps sure-footed. Free.
Slow down! There's no need to move about so quickly.
Celine halted in her tracks, excitement sparking in her chest. The beat of a distant drum met with the clash of cymbals. Soon thereafter, trumpets pealed into the vibrant night air. A sultry breeze toyed with the ends of the black satin ribbon about her throat, caressing her collarbone. Though she kept still, her heart reached for the music, as if it called to something deep in her bones. It never ceased to amaze her, how she seemed to thrive under cover of darkness, how she fell more in love with the moon every night. Each evening, despite the thick walls of the convent, Celine's toes had tapped alongside the melodies of the passing carnival parades. Rhythms and timbres and crescendos of sound she'd never before heard had captured her attention, stealing her thoughts from the Word of God. She was not alone in this. Antonia's fingers had frozen above the pages of Vespers, her mind transfixed as well. Even Pippa had smiled at the music. And here they were now, given a chance to revel in the heart of it all. The parade drew closer, the crowd around them spilling into the side streets of the Vieux Carré. Temporary vendors began rolling carts of food and drink onto its corners, adding layer upon layer to the sights and smells and sounds collecting about the space, spice and earth and the clash of metal against stone. Celine shifted with the sea of moving bodies, dragging Pippa in her wake. When they turned the corner, a delicious scent, unlike any Celine had ever known, permeated the air.
Cochon de lait?
A man with a suit-caked mustache called out in a strange French accent. He hovered above what looked like a beast of iron and black smoke, about the size of a large trunk. When he rolled back its lid, Celine saw meat roasting above a makeshift spit. The aroma of burning pecan wood and sugarcane wafting through it. He poured a concoction that smelled of melted butter, white wine, hot peppers, and minced garlic all over the smoked cochon. A delicious steam sizzled from the smoldering embers, weaving through and around them. Then the man with the mustache poked a large fork in one side of the meat, and a piece of cochon fell from the bone onto a waiting piece of bread. Immediately, a crowd formed a queue around the man and his iron beast. Celine desperately wished she carried with her a single coin, a single chance to partake in something so mouth-watering. She knew it was a bad idea to move closer to the merriment of the incoming parade, but it had been so long since this kind of unbridled joy had taken root in her heart. She supposed that was the way of it.
when one was guilty of committing unspeakable acts like murder. Joy did not live in a heart full of fear. Pippa saw the look on her face.
We can't linger here, Celine, she said in a grim tone. We can't watch the parade.
I know, Celine inhaled deeply. I'm just imagining that we could. That we did, and it was glorious. A sympathetic smile curled up Pippa's face.
I want to see it too. But if the Mother Superior finds out we disregarded her wishes, that we did not go straight to our meeting and immediately return, she'll never let us venture into the city alone again.
Of course, Celine nodded, but her feet remained fixed to one spot.
Please, Pippa continued, taking her hand. Life is much more difficult when those around us do not have faith in us.
Celine sighed. As usual, Pippa wasn't wrong. In the past, Celine's penchant for recklessness had proved problematic. Disastrous on at least one occasion. The sense of joy that had bloomed in her chest only a moment before wilted like a rose beneath the hot sun.
You're right, Celine said softly,
regretfully. She turned away from the crowd and all its delightful promises. Pippa linked arms with her as they began walking in the opposite direction.
I just don't have the same sense of adventure as you.
I'm not sure about that, Celine grinned. You did board a ship sailing into the unknown. And lie for me tonight, she added without words. It was impossible to miss the dark cloud passing over Pippa's features. Curiosity warmed through Celine again. It was the first time in 5 weeks that she'd seen a shadow descend on Pippa's face when confronted with questions concerning her past. Was it possible Pippa harbored a dark secret as well? It just seemed so unlikely. There was nothing left for me in Liverpool, Pippa began, as though she could read Celine's mind.
Except my family's good name and a legacy of debt. My father wasted his life and our fortunes in gambling hells and in the arms of fallen women, she winced. It was better that I leave and make my own path.
Anyone listening would sense how much it pained Pippa to disclose these truths. A part of Celine felt honored that Pippa had chosen to confide in her. She wrapped her arm more tightly around Pippa's, but could not ignore the dread coiling through her stomach. Pippa would expect Celine to return the gesture, to trust her with details of Celine's past. Sure enough, Pippa gazed at Celine as they made their way down the Avenue d'Ursuline. Celine did not need to ask why. Her friend waited expectantly for Celine to offer her own tale of woe, to share her painful truth. More than anything, Celine wished to tell Pippa what had happened. But how would Pippa, her only friend in the new world, look upon her if she learned Celine had killed a man and fled Paris in the aftermath? Pippa had said it herself. What kind of monster takes a human life? At best, she would stop looking upon Celine with the eyes of a friend. At worst, Celine shuddered to think. The result would be the same. She would have no one. So Celine kept to her story, offering Pippa a shrug of her shoulders, a dismissive smile.
I completely understand about wanting to make your own way, she said. There was nothing left for me in Paris. It was better for me to begin anew elsewhere, too.
Pippa said nothing. For a time, she did not look away from Celine. Then she nodded, as though she'd made a decision to leave things be, for now. The two girls made their way down Rue Royale, on the lookout for a sign that read Jacques. As they turned a corner, they passed a narrow side street that reeked suspiciously of refuse. The alleyway was unlit, removed from the realm of civilized folk. Celine stopped short when the suggestion of a scuffle emanated from its shadows. It struck her like a bolt of lightning, electricity sizzling across her skin. A man cried out, begging for his life in a guttural mix of French and English.
His words were followed by the sound of a fist against flesh. What if a murder was occurring only steps from where they stood? Celine knew it was wiser to continue on their course, to remain ambivalent, safe. But if a monster takes a life, what kind of creature refuses to save one? Pippa tugged on Celine's arm. Celine ignored her. Someone was being beaten to death in the alley without recourse. The parable of the Good Samaritan rang in her ears, admonishing her to take notice, to act. The man cried out again, and Celine took a step closer.
Celine!
Pippa exclaimed in a loud whisper.
Who's there?
A deep voice called from the alleyway's obscured center. Without blinking an eye, Celine yanked Pippa into a fall of nearby shadows, her heart thudding in her chest. She peered around the corner, into the narrow alleyway, allowing her sight to adjust to the darkness.
We shouldn't be here,
Pippa whispered in Celine's ear, her eyes wide with terror, her breaths heavy.
We should leave.
Celine pressed a finger to Pippa's mouth and shook her head. She focused on the scene unfolding in the depths of the small side street. It took an instant to form an understanding. A man lay on his side amid a pile of desiccated fruit peelings, his words garbled, his predicament clear. One hand was raised in supplication. His shoulders shook uncontrollably. Two other men stood on either side of this poor soul, bracketing him like a pair of suited specters. Through the darkness, the shorter man lit a cheroot. A flash of firelight shone on a set of perfect white teeth and the bleached linen of his rolled shirt sleeves. But it was not this man who caught Celine's notice. It was the taller one standing to his right, watching the violence unfold as though it were simple entertainment. A show performed on stage before a paying audience. Atop his head, Celine recognized the tilt of a Panama hat. Perhaps it was a coincidence. The boy she had seen that first night, the one whose memory she had struggled to conjure days later, could not be the only individual in New Orleans with a penchant for that style. But a deeper, more visceral part of Celine warned her not to put too much stock in coincidences.
Please, Fantôme, the man cowering in the muck begged. Pardonnez-moi!
His voice trembled while he pleaded for forgiveness. He stretched a hand toward the figure in the Panama hat, the one he'd called the Ghost. An apt moniker for a creature so comfortable in the shadows.
Apologies are nothing without amends, Livek, the Ghost said, in a richly rasping tone, his broad back to Celine, making it hard to discern any of his features.
Even in the subtlest of motions, he carried himself as many young men of pedigree did in Paris, without a care in the world. As though the very air he breathed were laced with diamond dust. The thought alone enraged Celine.
Continuing, he said, You were warned what would happen the next time you behaved with such disrespect.
He nodded at the man smoking the cheroot, who rolled back his shirt sleeves to begin anew.
Wait, wait, wait,
the cowering man said, his voice growing louder with each plea. He moved his forearm across his face to ward away the coming blows.
What do you want? Do you want me to apologize to her? I'll beg on my knees for Mademoiselle Valmont's forgiveness. I'll...
Alas, Levesque. You have nothing I or Mademoiselle Valmont want.
Leaning his right shoulder against the brick wall, he nodded again toward his compatriot with the cheroot. Like a crack of thunder, a fist slammed into the trembling man's face. As the beating continued, the Ghost pressed his fingers to the side of his throat, as though he were checking his own pulse. Then flicked away a speck of imaginary lint from his shoulder. The sound of breaking bones splintered through the night, causing Celine to flinch.
This was cruel, unnecessary, appalling. She moved to put a halt to the thrashing, but Pippa held fast to her arm. "Don't interfere," she said. "Please, violent men are unpredictable."
Her words stopped Celine cold. Of course they were. She knew well what violent men were capable of doing. Her mind flashed to a late winter evening in the atelier. A wealthy young man offering to bring her hot tea and a warm blanket while she worked. The feeling of a clammy palm against her neck. How it shocked her in its uninvited wantonness. How a touch quickly turned painful, nails digging into her arm, fingers tearing through her hair, a roughened palm around her ankle. No. No.
No!
Then the smashing of a candelabra against his skull. The silence that followed. The blood that flowed. Celine stood frozen by this sudden wash of memory. In that moment, she'd become a murderess. The next, a fugitive. Now she lived in a convent across the Atlantic, each night sharing the word of God with other young women. The irony. Pippa gripped Celine's forearm.
Celine?
Celine shook herself from her thoughts as the man with the cheroot moved to exit the alleyway, wiping his bloodied knuckles with a silk handkerchief. Pippa inhaled sharply when Celine stepped into his path without thought, blocking him from proceeding farther, meeting his hooded eyes with her own cool gaze. He quirked a brow at her. Even without the aid of a gas lamp, Celine could see his obvious youth and the fine stitching on his expensive waistcoat of English damask. A slender gold chain hung around his neck, a monocle dangling from its center. His copper skin was unmarred. Indeed, almost too perfect. His hair a mass of dark waves. If Celine had to guess, his family likely hailed from the East Indies. His hazel eyes were filled with interest and not a small amount of admiration. It was almost as though he had come across her on an evening stroll through a garden. This was, by all rights, the look of a gentleman. The boy's eyes wandered over Celine up and down. He let his gaze shift toward Pippa, whom he sent a slow smile. Then he bowed, before stepping back, clearing the narrow path with a flourish. And Celine was met, face to face, with Le Fantôme. Pippa's nails dug into Celine's skin, eliciting a shudder of fear. Another jolt of heated awareness. Le Fantôme glided closer, his movements soundless. He stood before Celine, his features absent any discernible emotion, the set of his shoulders easy, strong. Though he wasn't much taller than the boy with the monocle, his presence took up infinitely more space. She could well understand why their driver had yielded to him without thought. Celine stopped her eyes from widening, her lips from falling open. Were she to look upon this boy in the daylight, she would be forced to admit an unassailable truth. The ghost was the most striking young man she had ever seen. The skin above his cravat was bronzed, the muscles in his neck corded. Along his square jawline was the suggestion of stubble, its shadow accentuating the elegant symmetry of his features. It brought to light an aristocratic nose, which contrasted with his thick lashes and dark brow. Spanish, maybe? North African, perhaps? Regardless, he was an arresting mixture of the old world alongside the new. A pirate bedecked in Savile Row. He was, truly, beautiful. Like a prince from a dark fairy tale. Celine stood there a moment, words failing her. When she realized he'd rendered her speechless, stolen the very breath from her tongue, outrage coiled in her throat. A glimpse of amusement flickered beside his lips, a slight indentation in his right cheek. The gesture reeked of arrogance. This boy knew full well what he looked like. Knew how to wield its power like a master of arms. Celine narrowed her gaze at him. When he spoke, his eyes flashed, granting his chiseled features a look of menace.
"How may I help you this evening, mademoiselle?" he said in a low voice.
Since this fiend clearly enjoyed the sight of her flustered, Celine decided to ignore him, and instead turned toward the minion standing behind him, who propped one foot against the brick wall while inhaling from his cheroot.
"Does it make you proud to beat a helpless man, monsieur?" she asked him in a cold tone.
"Not in the slightest,"
the other boy said in a British accent, around an exhalation of pale blue smoke.
"But it does keep me limber for the boxing ring."
"You dare to jest about such behavior?" Celine demanded.
"You ought to be ashamed."
The boy with the cheroot laughed.
"The lovely young lady might speak differently if she knew what this bastard had done."
"He is helpless. You and your..."
Celine stabbed a finger in the ghost's direction, still refusing to acknowledge him.
"Friend, have all the power."
When she finished speaking, the man in the muck squinted up at her from behind swollen eyelids. Then he slumped back down, his chest heaving from relief.
"What if we were defending a woman's honor?"
The boy put out his cheroot, grinding it beneath his heel. The unexpected question took Celine off guard for an instant.
"There is no honor in beating a helpless man."
"A woman wise beyond her years," the ghost said softly,
a strange accent threading through his speech. When he spoke, a wave of ice passed between Celine's shoulder blades, sending a shiver down her spine.
"But don't presume to know everything, mademoiselle," he continued. Celine slid her gaze to his, her heart a low thud in her chest.
She lifted her chin.
"I know enough, monsieur. But know this, the truth is not always what you see."
He paused.
"Now step aside."
His steely eyes narrowed almost imperceptibly.
"Please."
Behind him, his friend laughed.
"As I live and breathe," he murmured. "Sébastien Saint-Germain, acting the part of a gentleman instead of a blighter."
In response, a muscle ticked in the ghost's jaw. The slightest hint of displeasure. He glanced toward his friend, warning him without words. The boy with the monocle grinned in response, which struck Celine as odd given their circumstances, when one clearly outranked the other. No matter. The ghost had a name.
"You do not command me, Sébastien," Celine said, her tone precise. "I defy you to try."
Sébastien took in a careful breath.
"I accept your challenge, mademoiselle."
With a wicked half-smile, he took hold of her by the waist and moved her to one side, lifting her off her feet as though she were lighter than air. Celine reacted on impulse, the desire to immobilize him as he had her. Her booted toes dangling above the cobblestones, matching him at eye level, she grabbed Sébastien by his silk cravat, yanked tight, her expression determined. His eyes widened with surprise, a spark of fire burning in their depths. The indentation in his cheek appeared for less than an instant. He was amused. Unmitigated ass. She tightened her grip on his cravat, felt the fine fabric wind through her fingers, refused to avert her gaze, though he held her in the air like a puppet on a string.
"Celine?"
Pippa's voice was high-pitched. Celine didn't need to guess how shocked her friend was. Pippa lurched closer, panic unfurling from her skin.
"Forgive us, for the interruption, sir.
Though Pippa addressed Sebastian, his gunmetal eyes never strayed from Celine's.
We need to leave, Pippa urged her.
Put me down, Monsieur Saint-Germain, Celine demanded. At once.
To her surprise, Sebastian set her upon her feet. But he did not remove his palms from about her waist, just as Celine did not relinquish her grasp on his cravat. Even through her corset, she felt the touch of his thumb above her hip, the press of his long fingers into the small of her back. Her pulse thudded in her chest, its rhythm fast and fervent.
She has teeth, he said quietly. But does she also have claws?
There is only one way to find out.
She meant it as a threat. He took it as a challenge. Sebastian's smile was quick, unstudied, unusual in a boy who obviously prided himself on control. The edge in his features sharpened, leading Celine to suspect he wasn't merely amused. Was it possible he was intrigued? Celine let go of his cravat, the back of her hand grazing an obsidian button as it skimmed over his waistcoat. Though it was far from the most improper thing she'd done tonight, the touch felt illicit, stolen.
Her cheeks warmed when something shifted in his gaze.
Bastian?
His friend's voice cut through their silent exchange.
We should go before someone summons the police.
He stepped forward purposefully, a palm moving to Sebastian's shoulder, demanding his attention. For a delicious instant, Bastian ignored it. Then he slid his hands from Celine's waist, stepped back, and tipped his hat at her. With horror, she realized his touch had seared into her skin. That could be the only explanation for why the air around her waist felt so chilled. When he glided past her, the scent of bergamot and leather trailed in his wake.
A flurry of emotions raced through her body. Celine settled for indignation, grasping for it like a lifeline. When she turned to ensure she had the last word,
she caught a glimmer of silver in her periphery. It took less than the blink of an eye to realize its source.
The man in the mud had freed a dagger from his boot, his scarred features feral in the moonlight. Celine cried out in warning, yanking Pippa to one side. In the same instant, Bastian whirled, withdrawing a revolver from inside his frock coat in a seamless motion. He took aim, meaning to fire, but his friend lunged for the man with the dagger, his right hand wrapping around the man's wrist.
Without explanation, the man slumped forward, as though he had suddenly fallen asleep, the dagger clattering to the ground beside him.
It all happened so quickly. Celine blinked once, twice. Pippa struggled for breath, her blonde curls quaking above her brow.
What did you do? Celine whispered to the boy with the monocle.
Is he dead?
The two young men held a wordless conversation.
He's asleep,
the boy with the monocle said carefully, as though he had settled on a version of the truth.
He'll be jolly good in an hour, though the lummox doesn't deserve it.
But
we're finished here,
Bastian said, his tone cold, forbidding. Celine glared at him.
You are absolutely not—
My apologies, mademoiselle, and to you, miss.
He bowed curtly to Pippa before gliding away.
Arjun,
he called over his shoulder.
I believe I owe you a drink. Far be it from me to refuse such a generous offer.
Arjun smiled mockingly as he reached for the fallen dagger, tossing it deep into the alleyway. Then he stood and wiped his hands once more.
Especially from such an esteemed gentleman.
Celine bit down on nothing as they began walking away, struggling to maintain her composure, her fists clenched. This cursed boy had stolen much from her in these moments. The words from her lips, the breath from her tongue. Now he thought to dismiss her like a child. You are no gentleman, Monsieur Saint-Germain, Celine said loudly.
He stopped short, pivoted on a polished heel.
Is that what you think, Celine?
Celine stood taller, her knuckles turning white.
Yes, I do.
Bastian leaned closer. A flicker of firelight caught on his gold watch chain, on the roaring lion etched into his signet ring.
I don't give a fuck.
Pippa gasped, both hands covering her mouth, her eyes wider than tea saucers.
Then Bastian continued on his way, Arjun laughing softly at his heels, almost pityingly. The word shook Celine. She'd never heard it said aloud. The sheltered life she'd lived in Paris had spared her from being trespassed by this kind of talk. Her father often commented that feminine ears were too delicate for such things. But Celine didn't feel as though her delicate ears had been assaulted by the single syllable. Bastian may have uttered a foul word, but he'd spoken to her as he would a man, as an equal. Blood rushed through her body, adrenaline fueling its path. Horror settled in the base of her throat, a knot slowly tightening. She knew this feeling, recognized it. She'd felt it when her attacker had stilled on the floor of the atelier, crimson flowing from the wound in his skull, her hand clasped around the candelabra. Celine felt powerful. A part of something bigger than herself. And still, she did not feel a hint of remorse for anything she had done. It was terrifying to know such a dark creature writhed beneath Celine's skin. This was not the behavior of a pious young woman, nor were these the emotions of a girl who should, by all rights, be seeking forgiveness. Salvation from a god she did not quite know or understand. Celine blinked to clear her thoughts, just as Pippa tugged on her hand.
Are you all right? Pippa said, her tone incredulous. I can't, she tried. I mean, can you believe what he said to you?
Celine nodded, not trusting herself to speak. She could not be certain what hand of fate continued placing Sebastian Saint-Germain in her path. Perhaps it was a test. God's penance for her most grievous sin, that a boy shrouded in darkness would force her to see the light, make of her a good Samaritan. But a greater fear lurked deep in Celine. Past the rush of blood into the marrow of her bones. No matter where she went, danger followed. And it horrified her, just as it thrilled her.
Hiver, 1872, Rue Saint-Louis, New Orleans.
I catch her profile in the glint of a shining brass sign. Her fear is reflected at me, her eyes bright. I look away. It reminds me of the young woman from last week. I do not relish the sight of fear on anyone, though I know it to be a necessary evil. For if we do not understand fear, how are we ever to cherish safety? I turn my attention to the three-story building before me, its trellised balconies overflowing with ivy and budding blossoms. Etched into the brass sign in the center, in odiously elaborate script, is the name Jacques. Above the name is a symbol I often see in my dreams, a symbol infamous among the circles of both the fallen and the brotherhood. A restaurant, encompasses the entire first floor of the structure, its gas lanterns already ablaze. A queue is wrapping around the corner. Someone, undoubtedly Casimir, has thrown open the double doors, revealing a smiling crowd and the sounds of fine china and tinkling crystal. Servers bustle about in their white gloves and starched jackets. For a moment, my senses are inundated by this symphony of splendor and decadence. It is a music I know well, both in this life and in my former one. A smile curves across my lips, amusing that she should lead me here of all places. If only these poor fools knew what lurked above them deep in a court of lions. If only my victim knew. Then they would all understand what it meant to feel true fear. When I glance at her again, I catch a look of hesitation on her face, as though she is uncertain about whether to proceed. Recent events have unnerved her, and it saddens me. I expected her to be stronger. She began the night with such purpose, each of her steps steady, resolute. Perhaps I shouldn't be too judgmental. This is not a city for everyone. It is a snake in the reeds, beautiful and deadly even while it sleeps. Moreover, I feel partially to blame for her fear. I could have come to their aid. It would have taken the work of a moment to blur through the alley and silence that paltry threat. But what purpose would that have served, beyond the risk of revealing my true nature before it was time? To my knowledge, my victim was not yet in any real danger. At least, not from the nephew of Le Comte de Saint-Germain. Bitterness coats my tongue. That is a promise I do not have the strength to break. Not yet. We are not ready for the war it will bring. My thoughts darken in a way I do not like, so I return to my earlier musings. It's possible, Arjun Desai, the boy with the immobilizing touch, could present a threat one day, but it is too soon to tell. His skill set continues to intrigue me, as it did on the day I first made his acquaintance. Without a doubt, he is a worthy member of La Côte de Lyon. Another smile spreads across my face. It pleases me that our city's society of mentalists, masquerading as something else entirely, managed to recruit him. It should make for a fascinating turn of events. But I cannot allow these things to distract me any more than they already have. Not tonight. There is far too much at stake for me to dwell on these incidental matters. I return my gaze to her, the young woman who led me to where it all began, unknowingly, fittingly. She pauses at the entrance of Jacques, rethinking her choices once more. Ah, but it is too late, my love. We cannot change the mistakes of our past. They live on, so that we may learn, if we should be but so lucky. Alas, dear girl, your luck takes flight tonight. I am the spider. I set silken traps. I watch as you step into my web. I wait to strike. But do not fear. I promise I will never forget you.
The Court of the Lions. Celine waited for Pippa to collect herself just outside the narrow alleyway. When Celine realized she was behaving oddly, standing stock still, her eyes unblinking, she began mimicking Pippa's motions, straightening her overskirt as if it was all that needed sorting. It never ceased to amaze Celine how circumstances could change so drastically in the matter of a moment. One second, every nerve ending in her body was alive, crackling with unseen energy. The next, everything went silent and motionless, as if she were submerged in a pool of deep water. Celine? Two lines collected between Pippa's brows. Celine gathered that Pippa had posed her a question. True to form, Celine had not been listening. Ever since Bastion and Arjun had left them behind in the alley, a stone's throw from the sleeping man who'd brandished a dagger at them less than 10 minutes prior, Pippa had been maintaining a steady stream of nervous chatter. Celine's focus had been elsewhere, lost in the delicious unknown.
"Have you heard a word I've said?" Pippa asked.
She held up her skirts and edged closer to Celine, concern seeping onto her features.
"I asked if you still wished to meet Odette."
"Of course," Celine answered without thought. Dismay touched the edges of Pippa's lips, there and gone in an instant.
"Oh, do you not wish to meet her?"
"It isn't that."
Pippa shook her head.
"I'm just uncertain whether it is the wisest course of action."
Her blue eyes flicked toward Celine.
"This evening has not gone as I'd hoped. I thought it better to stop tempting our fates."
Of course Pippa felt uncomfortable. Most people would feel skittish after the events of tonight. A girl like Pippa would wish to be anywhere else. No, that wasn't right. She would wish to be home, safe in her bed, with a soft blanket and a cup of hot tea. Better yet, with a mother or a lover to offer a soothing touch. Celine exhaled slowly, a dark realization settling amid her thoughts. Proper young women certainly wouldn't feel so enlivened by the very idea of danger. Nor would they already be seeking out the next chance to feel their hearts pound in their ears, and their faces flush as though they were too close to a candle flame. Further proof that something was broken inside Celine. Breathing deeply through her nose, Celine reached for her friend's hand. Her touch gentle, comforting.
"I'm sorry, Pippa," she said.
"I've been distracted by all that happened."
"Of course you don't want to meet with Odette tonight after, well, everything.
I completely understand. We'll return to the convent at once."
She was careful not to let her disappointment show, though she felt it keenly.
Her friend had risked enough this evening on her account. When Celine moved to retrace their steps, Pippa dawdled behind her. Celine turned in place.
Pippa?
Pippa quirked her lips to one side.
You really wanted to go, didn't you? You were happier tonight than I've ever seen you before. Freya?
Celine thought to lie, but she was wearied by the notion. So very wearied. She simply nodded. A warm light filled Pippa's gaze.
It was like getting a peek into who you truly are, she said softly. It made me feel like we were really friends.
We are really friends. Pippa shook her head, but it was not unkind.
Not yet, but I hope we will be. I do so want to be your friend, Celine.
Celine swallowed, something clutching around her heart.
I want to be your friend too, Pippa. Very much.
Pippa nodded. Then she took hold of her skirts once more, resolve flashing across her face.
We shouldn't keep Odette waiting.
Less than 2 blocks away, Celine and Pippa caught sight of a brass sign positioned above the slender double doors of a well-lit establishment. It read Jacques in fancy script. Etched above the name was a familiar symbol, a fleur-de-lis in the mouth of a roaring lion. In the distance, the pier loomed ominously, the water around it glittering like a sea of black diamonds, ready to swallow its supplicants whole.
Oh, Pippa said, realization dawning on her. It's a restaurant.
A similar wash of surprise passed through Celine. It felt odd for Odette to direct them to a restaurant, especially for the purpose of a dress fitting. Based on the long queue snaking around the front, it was clear the owner of Jacques knew how to capture the attention of a crowd, especially for a Monday evening. But on the outside, the structure itself looked rather ordinary. Red brick and black lacquered shutters enclosing 3 stories. Gas lamps blazing between tall, narrow windows. Polished wooden floors stained a light caramel color. Drapes of deep burgundy damask cascading down the walls. Yet to Celine, something about it felt off. Like a picture frame hanging askew. As if the restaurant had dutifully mastered every detail of the mundane with the intention of wearing them as a mask. Concealing what, Celine could only guess. Each time the door opened, the crystals hanging from the chandelier beside the entrance chimed merrily, like they were welcoming newcomers. Then the lingering notes turned melancholy. A clash of discordant sounds, the slightest shift to minor key. To Celine, it rang as a quiet warning. Still, everyone in the room kept smiling, oblivious to the unseen threat. Her gaze slipped across the contented faces of Jacques' countless patrons. How was it they could not feel it too? Perhaps Celine was mistaken. Perhaps these observations formed from a place of wishful thought. Maybe she sought proof she wasn't the only one forced to wear a mask. And in doing so, she had falsely found a kindred spirit in a restaurant. How ridiculous, she chastised herself. What kind of silly fool shared a silent understanding with a structure of brick and mortar? Celine committed to casting aside her concerns like a stone lying in her path. Pippa touched Celine's shoulder to catch her attention.
Should we seek out the gentleman Odette mentioned earlier today?
Noe.
Leads away.
Celine sent a deceptively careless grin over her shoulder. As soon as the 2 girls crossed the threshold of Jacques, Pippa pausing with a twinge of trepidation, the figurative stone Celine had cast aside rolled back into her path. She must be mad, seeing and feeling things not even in the domain of possibility. But even in the most fevered of her dreams,
It would be impossible to ignore this truth. Jacques was anything but ordinary. It was not about what Celine saw. It was about what she felt. A strange sensation rippled across her skin, tingling through her blood, taking root in her core. Something hooked around her spine, drawing her in with an unspoken promise. Something otherworldly. Yes, that was it. It was as though she had wandered into another realm. Not heaven. Not hell, but somewhere in between. A liminal space spanning both light and dark. Whatever it was, Celine felt comfortable there. An elbow struck Celine's right arm, snagging her from her observations. The server, who hastened past them, offered an apologetic glance, his features knitted along his freckled